Welcome to the April 7th edition of the PFF Forecast. This, I know I say this every week, I'm not lying. This is a fucking awesome episode, okay? JT O'Sullivan joins us. If you don't know who JT O'Sullivan is, you're going to find out, and you're going to be happy you did. We talk about a lot of stuff, including Justin Fields, Mac Jones, all the other quarterbacks. We do a mock draft with him. We talk about Brett Favre, being Brett Favre's backup. It was a fantastic 30-ish minutes of an interview. We're also going to react to it and talk about some draft props. I know we promised that we were going to do win totals today, but we got JT on. So the win totals for the NFC will be Sunday on Masters Sunday. And yes, I'm going to give you Masters picks. You know this. Let's rock. I'm hyped about that because we just recorded the interview and it was a lot of fun. So we're not going to
make fun of our shorts.
We
already like him because he comes in with the humor right away.
It was interesting. If you're listening to this, it's about 82 degrees in Cincinnati, and so you know we're both very excited to wear the shorts. JT's in San Diego and dude's wearing a hoodie. You know, because you can do that in California because every day is sunny. Here, if it's sunny and you don't wear shorts and a t-shirt, you've lost like one of the 10 days where you can do that comfortably.
The worst thing, I think the funniest thing about most of our guests is they're living somewhere that George covets. Like one of these times we got to interview like Trey Lance's coach and be like, where are you living right now? Bismarck. And for the first time, you know, George will be like, oh yeah. Good for you.
I don't know. Maybe there's something in Bismarck that we're missing out on.
I went to a wedding once in Bismarck. No.
No.
Yeah. I actually played a game. It was the coldest game I ever played. But yeah, it's no. There are places, I'll have you know, there are places other than Indianapolis that are worse than Cincinnati.
TBD. Maybe we'll go on a road trip one of these days. Now that, look, I'm vaccinated. I've been engaging in discourse with the people on the internet. Some really good takes out there.
Our good friend Lee Sharp, I think, got the ass end of the internet. I got to say, like, those are pretty good, like, okay, let's go through and block some people.
Well, here's what you do. You got to fire out on Twitter. At least this is the way I attack it, is you fire out a tweet, and that's your Twitter for the day. You don't get to go engage. You don't get to do that. You got to tweet. People will go engage, and that's it. You don't do that. I never go back in. Usually I mute comments, actually, just to like try and be productive.
Yeah, you don't want those people in your mentions, though. Like,
I don't care.
Because like, what if one of your friends catches a stray like racist person talking to them? If they can't even see your tweet,
welcome to the real world.
Well, okay, sure, but you know, I'm trying.
Yeah,
look,
I get it.
I'll say you're vaccinating yourself to protect others. Take another step.
Yes.
And protect your Twitter followers
as well. That's a good point. That's a great point. Okay, let's get to the interview. We'll recap it on the other side of this. JT O'Sullivan is here with us. And before we get to JT, I got to remind you, got to pay the bills here. The PFF okay,
and
draft.
I have to respond to some comments on YouTube, and I have to look lively during these.
It's true. You do. You need to have some energy. The PFF NFL draft show this year is going to be fantastic. We're going to do it in this room. It's going to be April 29th. We're going to start at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have the whole crew here. And there's rumors that there are going to be some celebrities jumping on as well. Okay, we're working on it. But the whole crew is going to be here. It's going to be fantastic. There's going to be film. There's going to be footage of actual football players playing football on the PFF draft show. You don't see that often.
No.
And there's no better place to go watch that because guess what? We've graded every player and every play. It's going to be fantastic, okay? You can watch it on pff.com. We're going to have a live draft tracker. It's going to be awesome, so come check
live
it out.
Live projections, live fantasy analysis,
the whole
live
deal.
Gambling, everything.
Oh, and here's the best part, is at pick number three, I can promise you, there will never be a more entertaining moment of yours truly. I know I'm not that entertaining most of the time. I'm going to be a fucking mess.
Remember when we did the show at the old couches out
yes,
there?
Yes, I do.
And we're all sweating through the first pick because we all have a ton of money on Kyler Murray.
Yep.
And then, of course, all of us exhale, not because the show is going particularly well, but because we all want our bets.
So come check it out. PFF.com. And of course, get a PFF draft guide with a PFF Edge subscription that will give you all the information on every player leading up to it on PFF.com. Just $40 for a whole year for that subscription. Great deal. Okay, JT O'Sullivan, let's get it. It is now our pleasure to welcome on JT O'Sullivan. There's so many ways that I could intro JT O'Sullivan. Indelible memory from my time as a Niner fan, the Mike Nolan era. A well-traveled historian, a California born and bred, you know, one of the finest, and also the creator of the QB School on YouTube. If you have not checked it out, you need to. You absolutely need to. These are some of the best QB breakdowns. And he's joining us from outside in San Diego to rub it in, I assume, JT. Yeah.
Part of a...
No, it's nice here. I'm not going to lie. You guys are making me a little jealous with the shorty shorts and the ankle socks. But you can still fit in out here. We'll let you go.
JT, you are a part of a class of Brett Favre backups. There's like 15 of you guys that ended up starting an opening day game. It was like Doug Peterson, Aaron Brooks, Matt Hasselbeck, Mark Brunell, Ty Detmer, JT O'Sullivan, Aaron Rodgers. Like, just a humongous group of quarterbacks. Kurt Warner also. Mm-hmm. Like, just a great group of four. What was the Brett, like, can you just give me a Brett Favre, like, you know, just brief what was like the backup Brett Favre?
Yeah, what was like, there's no great way to do it briefly. I will tell you that I'm sure you guys, y'all have gotten the opportunity to be around people that you really look up to at one point. And it never quite, you know, unfortunately, it's just really hard to live up to that, I would say. And Brett did, he practiced harder than I would ever have imagined. He really did. The stuff that everybody loved when you saw on Sundays, him like having fun, the joy, the competition, that was him every day at practice. And so it was fun to see that. And I tried to steal that from my own approach, but just like, you know, good old boy, always having a good time, great storyteller. There are things that I still say that I stole from him and I take as my own all the time when I'm coaching high school players out here. So it's I took a lot from him, but more than anything else, just the approach he had every day getting after it that I thought was infectious. I thought people gravitate towards and just aspire to have that kind of conviction at practice every day.
Do you have any sayings that you specifically like? I want to get some sayings out here for a reason.
Yeah, well, one that I say all the time, and I use it both when I teach leadership and when I kind of make fun of people, a joke on the side, is like, sometimes, Brett, I was really frustrated with Daryl Bevel, was our quarterback coach at the time. And I know there's a lot of people that are frustrated with Daryl Bevel for different reasons. But I was frustrated on just from, felt like my opportunity was being squeezed. I didn't like what I was being asked to do. And so he basically told me one time, he pulled me aside, I was like, hey, one of the things that I learned early on that's really helped me in my career is sometimes you got to overcome your coaching. And I really took it as just like a, hey, you know, at some point this career is your career. It doesn't matter what your quarter, doesn't matter what your coach says, doesn't matter, you know, if you get cut and you get traded, you got to make the absolute most of this thing. And so I say that all the time, you got to overcome your coaching. I tell my kids they got to overcome their parenting. And there's an element of just, you know, you got to have the mindset that you're going to overcome this if it's important enough to you.
Can you say that?
You have to overcome your coaching.
Did you overcome your coaching?
Did who? Did Brett?
Did you?
I wasn't a good... Maybe. Like, well, both JT and I are former Division II football players. I feel like a common bond, but no, I was not good enough. JT was good enough to make it to the league.
I was trying to get you... So here's what I'm trying to get, JT. And I was going to say this for the end. We got to do it now. Eric is a really good... He does great impressions. And his Brett Favre impression... It gets me. It gets me at my core. And so, I was just trying to get him to say the word maybe.
Oh, yeah. Should Chili have called a better play? Maybe.
Well, I'll give you some more ones that you can work into your repertoire here. One of my favorite things that he used to say all the time was, they'd be like, hey, Brett, you know, what's the read on this play? He'd be like, 1, 2, 3, put it on him. Like, all right, you know, okay, I guess that worked.
1, 2, 3, put it on him.
He's a good old boy. I thought that was the perfect way to put it.
I think that's a great quote, though. You overcome, because it is ultimately like no one. So we had Sage Rosenfels on last week, and he played for Brad, you know, Childress, and like he's had certain things to say about Kyle Shanahan. He's had certain things to say about Brad Childress. Yeah. And ultimately, like, no one remembers that he was good under Shanny, and he barely played under Childress, because it is his career ultimately. And like, that's a great point to make. Whereas obviously you are a product of a lot of your environment, but no one remembers your environment. They remember how you played. And so, I mean, Brett's super talented, so he can overcome a lot, but like, it is good. I think a good way to instruct people.
Yeah. And yet, you know, weren't able to look. I remember some Niner teams, JT, where there was no overcoming those that yeah. coaching, no matter how hard you tried. Because you played under Nolan, right?
Yeah, I was there. I probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a little Singletary as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and then that was Mike Martz, right? Mike yeah. Martz, you played for Detroit, and then
yeah.
And then he was the OC yeah, that, the final year of
that
Nolan.
That was a wild experience for me, because I went in there, and I've told the story a handful of different times, but I went in there, and Alex Smith and Sean Hill were competing for the job in San Francisco. I did not get a rep in spring. Not one rep. And I went from being the backup in Detroit to not getting a rep in the spring. And then Alex hurt his shoulder in camp, and Mike was pissed at Sean and kind of frustrated with Alex. And he's like, well, you're in there. You just take Alex's reps. And then I just never stopped taking the reps. And it was just like, and I remember thinking like, you know what? We could have really used that spring.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
Oh, that's great. We can save the Singletary stories for after. I remember one time seeing Mike Nolan at the Woodside Deli in California, and I thought there were people that looked like they wanted to fight him. Like, there were people in there that were maybe a beer away from being ready to charge Mike Nolan. But we do want to talk a little bit about the draft QBs. I think it's a good segue, because so much of what these guys' careers will look like is going to be dictated by the environment that they show up into. But right now, we have to judge them based on what we've seen, and you've done this in great detail on your YouTube channel. And one of the things that's interesting for us, like, we're computer nerds in many people's minds. Like, we try and leverage, you know, data and make predictions that are based on that, as opposed to, you know, kind of the traditional watching of the film side of things. There are people in our company that definitely do that. We're the nerds of the group. So I want to hear from your perspective, you know, how do you, when you're breaking down the film, what are you looking for? How are you grading these guys out? What's your process for that?
Well, I mean, I think you guys have a much more rigid methodology than I do. You know, I'm doing it as more on the old school side, and I'm doing super incomplete stuff as well. Mm-hmm. I know people, and I enjoy it, and I have fun going back and forth with people, but I'm just watching everything that you see on the channel. That's what I'm watching. You know, I am curious. I like to know. I'm curious about football. I enjoy football, but I'm not doing any sort of like in-depth, you know, quantitative stuff, pulling apart, you know, hit charts and things like that. I'm watching it to see things that I think can translate to Sundays, things that I think are interesting. So I gravitate towards accuracy. I gravitate towards anticipation. I gravitate towards, you know, athleticism that I think can extend plays and be unique. When it comes to what the position is evolving towards. But, you know, I personally have a lot of respect for the side that takes the opposite side, that can actually put, you know, data behind their predictions, where I get uncomfortable even doing ranking, because I'm not even in like the mock draft world to be like, I don't know what this organization needs. You know, my days are done looking at depth charts to figure out where I think I could get a job across the league on, you know, a team that needs a backup, things like that, where, you know, I'm just looking for players that I like watching. I like watching Zach Wilson. I like watching Justin Fields. I like watching that tier of player. And so I think that those guys potentially can be successful on Sundays. You've already qualified it just like I would. So much of it is luck. So much of it depends on your situation, your organization. You know, I always think it's bizarre in American sports that it's the norm to say, hey, congratulations, you're the best. You're going to the worst organization. But that's just the way that our drafts work here. And people think it's normal because that's what every sport does. It's not like that on the international stage, you know, at different mm-hmm. levels of different sports. And so that's just my take on it. I think it's very going to be really difficult for whoever gets picked 1 and 2 to go in and be successful anytime soon. I just think those organizations are on different levels versus, you know, whoever gets picked 3rd has a great opportunity to go in there and hit the ground running, you know, depending on what they do with Garoppolo and going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do such a great job in your videos of talking about, like, from the, like, I, you know, neither one of us has played quarterback. And, you know, when
you played quarterback for our flag football team.
Yeah, when neither one of us has really played quarterback. And, you know, you have a perspective of, here's when this, you know, when Kellen Mond hits his back foot, he should be thinking about it this way. And, you know, you're probably, there's evolutions in the game where that's not always the case, but it's so much further along than, you know, when we're looking at it. And I put out this stat the other day. It was like 14 of 57 throwing the ball over 10 yards in the air outside the hash marks. And so then I'm, of course, looking at all those throws and, like, wondering, okay, you know, is it the receiver who can't get open? Is it the scheme or everything? But, like, you know, there's so much value in being able to get in the head of a quarterback and, you know, being sort of like, well, was this even the correct read to make? Was this the only throw he could make because everybody else wasn't open? And so, like, I think that there's a ton of value in that, and why I think we've found so much value. And obviously we do our projections, and, you know, I'll tell you what my statistical rankings are of the quarterbacks, but it is interesting just to hear, like, the, hey, this is why this happened this way, and this is why that happened the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see the value in both as well. I think it's so hard for me to say with any sort of certainty most of the time, hey, this is the read. This is where the ball should go for sure. Because unless you're in the quarterback room, and unless you know what that game, especially on Sundays, you know, Saturdays, high school, college games, they have a little bit more of what I would classify as like pure progressions, meaning it doesn't matter what the coverage is. You read it 1, 2, 3, and we go from there. We're in the league.
Put it on them.
You know, versus this look, this coverage, this thing, we're going to go this week to this. And it's hard to play like that, but that's what you have to do at that level. And that's what most teams are asking their quarterback to do. So when I say, you know, gosh, that comeback on the other side is wide open, why didn't he just throw it to him? Well, because the guy didn't have a clicker. You know, he's back there looking at the other side because his coach told him to look at the other side. And I know what that's like because I've been in situations where the reason I was playing was because I was doing what the coach was asking me to do. You know, I wasn't going rogue. I wasn't doing, you know, playing recess back there. And so I understand that value of it. The other thing that you talked a little bit about is just the precision of what the passing game is like in the drop back game on Sundays, as far as the timing of the feet, the depth, being where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there, and what the accuracy needed and the anticipation needed to be successful in that type of passing game is hard to replicate anywhere other than Sundays. Well, and so I think that part of it is hard to give.
Well, and do you think that is why it's so hard to translate? Because I was talking to Mark Trestman, and that was literally the first thing he said to me when I was like, well, what do you look for in quarterback play? And he said, I want to see a guy be able to go through the steps. Like, it's a five-step drop, and I want him at this depth before I think of anything. And I'm thinking to myself, but there's so many other things a quarterback does, and some of the best quarterbacks are the Brett Favre's, the rule breakers, the Patrick Mahomes's, and, you know, what Zach Wilson, I think a lot of people believe he could be. But at the same time, like, I think that there are plenty of quarterbacks who fail because they're so good at the college level where there's so much margin for error, and they get to the NFL and maybe they're not that elite player physically, but they also can't manufacture the sort of precisions that's necessary, like, to say be a Kirk Cousins, where Kirk is not the most talented quarterback in the world, but he appears to, from my perspective, to be a person that checks all the boxes in the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would agree with Mark Trestman with saying that, you know, as far as the most important thing. I certainly think it is an important thing. I think if you ask most people in the league who coach and deal with the position, I would say that they would rather have someone who can check all the boxes as far as physically, and then they can coach them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'll coach them up. I think that's the part that's hard, you know, sometimes with these projections, as far as, like, a lot of these guys, you know, everybody's an alpha male in the league. And so they all think that they're the best coach. They can all coach up the guy, the superstar athlete, to be even better and do our system the way we want him to do. The reality is you probably can't do that all the time, but you certainly can. And guys can get better. And that's the thing that's hard, not a thing. One of the many things that's hard when you're projecting someone's ability on Sundays is, you know, what are they asked to do in college? Because everybody loves to say, oh, you know, he's running a college offense. It won't translate to the league. Well, it's a college offense in college. Like, yeah, it's not the same. It's a different level of rigor. It's a different level of volume, all those things. Does he have the capacity to translate that to Sundays? And I think if you can see it, you know, a little bit in any part of the game, it makes it easier to make that assumption. But at the same time, the game is faster. And it just is. I mean, I think I was around a number of guys who, if you got them on a whiteboard or if you got them in the film room, they would know where to go with the ball all the time. But then you get out there field level in a helmet and it feels like it's like, you know, playing super advanced mode and you can't even get a completion. Things are going too fast. And so it's about, you know, being able to make the most of your moment. If you're playing, it's about being able to make the most of that moment, be as prepared as you possibly can be. But if you're projecting some of these guys, I think you love to see bits and pieces of it, but you sure as hell never know. And for me, as far as the, you know, the precision thing about the five-step footwork, I'm always looking, to me, that says more about the coaching at the college level as far as what they're asking him to do. Like, if you look at Mac Jones, he's in a precision passing game. He knows where he's supposed to go. You can see him working through clean progressions. Versus sometimes, you know, a guy who maybe it's not quite the same precision, a guy like maybe what they're asking Trey Lance to do at North Dakota State, it might not be the same type of precision passing game. It doesn't mean that Trey Lance can't do that. He just hasn't been asked to do that yet. And so it's their job to project, hey, can he do that consistently on Sundays when we've seen Mac Jones do bits and pieces of it on Saturdays before.
I could have, to transition here a little bit, I could have introduced you also as a comedian because the other day I turned on a QB rankings video on YouTube. And how did you not laugh? So I caught you smirking at the top and I go, oh, this is what How the fuck did you not? That was 17 minutes. You had 17 at one
point. The intelligence test is how long it takes you to realize
to figure out what
he's joking. Yeah, like it's the Daniel Kahneman thing, that the amount of time it takes you to realize he's the smartest person in the room is how intelligent you are. But how, if it took you more, like,
what would you say that, how, if someone said it took me X minutes, what would it have to be for you to respect them a little bit more based on that?
I mean, it depends. Some people that watch every single video, they knew immediately just with the order. Yeah. Like, the order was like, oh, this is a bullshit.
Yeah,
and other people know that I put out April Fool's stuff before, and they were already, you know,
into it,
getting excited for it. But if you didn't know, there's no, I tried to make it as like straight faced as I possibly could. So at one point, I think I like go off script a little bit.
You did laugh.
Talk about stuff that isn't like it. So it's like, yeah, I mean, there's no disrespect for a certain amount of time. I personally, it was a weird experience for me because, you know, I'm filming. You guys know, you create content. You're like, sometimes you're by yourself and you're like, you know, I'm like, I'm not sure if this is funny. You know, it's funny to me. I'm laughing. I have to like make the edits myself. But like at the same time, I'm like, this could be a huge just dumpster fire. But I was like, I was having fun with this. So I was like, oh, we'll try it.
There's a tear.
It reminds.
There's a difference between one and two.
It reminds me of like one time I
went, room for him to grow taller.
I went to a few stand-up comedy things on Zoom during the pandemic, and these guys are like, look, I can't hear any of you laugh. This is weird as hell for me. And just like be mindful of that. That must have been like you said, like you're in that room by yourself and you're like, this could bomb or it could be. I thought it was really funny. And I thought, obviously, when the rankings were the same as our friend Chris Sims's were, you get on the scent a little bit.
Sure.
Because the Kellen Mond thing, it's like,
here, I got on the scent when I realized that everything he was saying about the quarterbacks was just clearly made up. You know, it was like so many sayings that you've just heard parroted over and over and over again. And then, so then there was the rankings, and then there's a part where you laugh, but then you transition from like the dry humor to a referendum on spewing bullshit into the ether in regards to the Justin Fields work ethic thing. And then you go back into the dry humor. Basically what I'm saying is, if you haven't watched it, you should go watch it. We'll be right back to JT O'Sullivan. JT Justin Thomas is playing in the Masters this week. And that's why I've got to tell you that at DraftKings and the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use promo code PFF when you sign up and you get 100-1 odds on any golfer to finish in the top 10. JT would be a guy that I would consider taking. Maybe you go Dustin Johnson, Rory, maybe Spieth, people love him. But anyway, you get $1 to win 100, you absolutely have to go make this happen at DraftKings, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app with the promo code PFF. And that way, if you're not a golf guy, you then all of a sudden have a reason to tell whoever it is that's, you know, saying, hey, honey, why aren't you off getting off the couch? Look, I have a 100-to-1 investment on our future, and I need to watch this. And you can watch it the whole way through. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. This is for new customers. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Also, if you are looking to invest in sports and, you know, maybe betting on things in the future or whatever is a little tricky for you, Symbol is a great place because you can essentially trade like you would on the stock market, but with sports teams. It's fantastic. And if you use promo code PFF when you go to Symbol, SIMBULL.app/PFF, and deposit just $10 there, you get a free PFF Edge annual subscription for the year, for a whole year. It's $40. And then you get $10 to start your portfolio, go buy, let's see. I mean, right now, I'm buying all things Justin Fields and the 49ers. So, you know, I'm probably just going to go buy more Sim Niners. Eric, I don't know if you've bet any or purchased anything recently.
I have two Sim Falcons.
Still rolling in. Shares. Just still rolling in on the Falcons.
Absolutely need to. I mean,
we've got win totals up on the site on pff.com. You could read those, and those might be some teams you buy some Sim shares in. Go to Symbol, SIMBULL.app/PFF. Deposit $10 with promo code PFF. And now we are back to JT O'Sullivan. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to do a mock draft. Okay? We're going to go 1 through 4 or 5, depending on how much time we have. And you don't get to make this one a joke. I want to know who you'd actually pick in these spots. And this is, cool. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. So the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And JT, by the way, we're wrong all the time. So don't.
We're saving this so that we can replay it when these guys have, you know, not worked out 10 years later.
I once wrote an article called it's Justin Herbert might not be worth the gamble. So
look, it's, you know,
we're all
this is going to be fun though. So let's start with number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Urban Meyer and the Khan family are selecting with the number one overall pick. Who?
I mean, I so badly want to say someone else, but I mean, we'll say Trevor Lawrence.
Okay.
Just because. I won't go off the rails immediately, but I don't want to.
Okay, good. So immediately a difference from your rankings video. So something appears fishy here.
You're onto something.
Yeah, I'm onto something. Okay, let's go to number two before we have a quick discussion. Number two, the New York Jets, now Sam Darnold-less, select.
Let me walk this back because okay. I want to make sure I'm qualifying this because I have a hard time doing this. Am I selecting this for Jacksonville and for the Jets?
Yes,
you are. Or am I selecting this? I'm the owner. I'm the general manager. This is who I want to roll with.
Exactly.
Okay, then I'll go back. I'm going to roll with Justin Fields first, Trevor Lawrence second.
Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit because – Yeah, in your rankings video, you know, Justin Fields was not
second to last.
So it's a big turnaround. So what is it for you? You watch Justin Fields. What is it that sets him apart and puts him above Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson?
I don't know if there's like huge separation, but I personally, the thing that I like Trevor Lawrence a lot. I think that he's been kind of pegged as that guy for so long that maybe he hasn't lived up to it quite as much as people would like him to. Mm-hmm. The thing that I also fall back to is I just feel like he hasn't performed in some of the bigger moments as much as I would have liked him to. And I feel like Justin Fields by no means had a perfect season. There were certainly throws that are head scratchers and didn't play as well as he possibly could. But when I project some of the things that I see him do as a full body of work, I just like his ceiling. I like what he brings to the table versus everything else. I don't think you could go wrong with either one of those guys. I don't think you could go wrong with the top three guys. Okay. But if I was picking and I was building an offense, I like how Justin Fields competes. I like how he battled through. I like how tough he was. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of that stuff that I feel like is hard to kind of, you know, put a quantitative tough guy measure on it that I think matters in an NFL locker room.
So it doesn't bother you that he repeatedly hits snooze on his alarm per a scout?
No. Okay. I can't even, don't even go down.
Sorry, we're not, we had a rant about that last week. I think it was similar to yours.
I'll start losing it. But let's, okay, this is good.
Well, here's the thing. This was a position that we had a season ago that it was basically neck and neck.
Yep.
And
we said we'd take Fields.
We would take Fields if pressed. I think, like, you bring up a good point. Not only Lawrence plays in the ACC, which is an overrated football conference and has been for probably five or six years. And to your point about Trey Lance, it's not that he crumbled in every circumstance that he had, opponents that were really good. It's that he only had opponents that were really good a relatively few amount of times. And the last two times he was at the plate during it, he did not play as well as he could have. And we don't, unlike with Fields and unlike, you know, with Mac, you know, this, some of the SEC quarterbacks, we don't have them playing a murderer's row. I mean, they're playing Virginia some weeks. They're playing Duke some weeks. Hey. And again, like, that doesn't mean that he couldn't, if you gave him an SEC schedule, it wouldn't play out the same. But it is a valid point.
What I'll say that I think is great about this is that we are picking every nit that has ever been thought of or could exist with Justin Fields, and we're not doing that with Trevor Lawrence. Why? Well, he's five-star. He's been a five-star. What reason do we have to knock him off that pedestal? Whereas with Justin Fields, it's like, dude, can you please go find some, you know, goon who's going to talk about, you know, something bad that he did in seventh grade so we can knock him off a pedestal? As you can see, I'm getting fired up. Number three.
Like it.
Number three. The San Francisco 49ers are on the clock. Your former team, you have a chance to redeem the 49ers of the ills that they caused you.
They definitely didn't cause me any ills.
I would say, for watching that team.
I personally think that they're going to end up with Fields. I hope that they end up with Fields. I think in my draft situation, they're going to end up with Zach Wilson here, okay. You know, just with best available as far as that position. But again, I'm doing the same thing that I think the 49ers did. They said, in my opinion, we love these three guys. I don't care who we get. It doesn't matter who we get. It's not within our control. We want one of those three guys. And really, that's what – and I'm going to guess that organization thinks that they can win and win right now with any of those three guys because of the moves that they've made. And so this time they get Zach Wilson, but I probably think they're going to end up with Fields, and it's going to be fun to watch. I really do. I'm excited for them.
Yeah. I think that is a really good take that doesn't require a lot of dot connecting – that winds you in a weird circuitous route to Mac Jones.
George wants Fields to go to his favorite team so badly, and he's been talking himself out of the Mac Jones possibility for a while. Even though Mac Jones is not a bad prospect, I'm wholeheartedly with you that I think that there's a difference between the fourth and fifth QBs and the first three. And the first three can switch place. Like, the anchoring on Lawrence is something that we haven't
super real.
That I don't think is being properly addressed.
Would you go Mac Jones, Trey Lance, or would you go Trey Lance then Mac Jones or Kellen Mond?
I know you guys probably are not a Kellen Mond fan. I probably would go Trey Lance, Kellen Mond.
Okay,
but again, you know, there's a little bit of me that struggles with just, and I can hear myself arguing against myself to a certain extent, like, small sample size, had a great year. You know, it's not his fault that he didn't beat out Tua. I mean, it is his fault, but like, he only got 1 year to play. He had a great year. I think it's really cool that Mac Jones played so well. I had fun watching Alabama play. I thought their offense was different, dynamic with him in there, with what they were asking him to do. But if I was projecting someone that I would want on my roster for the next 5 to 10 years, I might be more interested in Kellen Mond than I would with Mac Jones. But I think Trey Lance is the four person for me in that slot. And then, you know, I could probably be swayed one way or the other by whoever I've watched most recently for Kellen Mond and Mac Jones.
The thing with Mac Jones that's interesting is you have the sort of confluence of Tua had all four of those receivers mm-hmm. at the same time, whereas Mac spent a great deal of his time playing with just one of them. But Alabama is so replete with players that, like, I don't even know if, like, this Menchie guy might be a first-round pick next year. Or,
yeah, Menchie.
You know, the tight end guy. And then the other thing is 2019 pre-pandemic football – defense existed a little bit. The SEC defenses in 2020 were like hot knife through butter basically the whole time. No, so then
the rate at which he threw to guys with two steps or more of separation is almost like double that of anyone else on throws 5+ yards downfield. It was insane. And you know, Trevor Lawrence was throwing more bubble screens than anyone else. Like, there's a lot of, you know, these things that contextually put you know, help you frame these quarterbacks.
I mean, Devontae Smith, if you keep bubble screens in, was contested on only 16% of his targets last 2 years. So it's really a friendly offense, but they're also extremely talented. So then how do you, like, untangle all that?
Well, that's why he's such a great fit for Kyle Shanahan's system. And
a lot of talented players on that team, that's for sure.
Let me ask you this, because I just got to keep going down this rabbit hole. What does Mac Jones do better than Justin Fields?
Oh, he's got a better publicist about processing. You know, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't have a great answer. I think that there's probably more evidence on the film of him getting to the check down quicker. You know, if you want to call that processing, okay. You know, I think it's him knowing exactly what he's supposed to do with the ball and being efficient and decisive. He does. He looks good with it. But, you know, there are some reps, trying to think who I most watched recent for Alabama, where it looked like a 7-on-7 rep. You know, there was no one around him. You know, you're checking it down immediately to a wide open guy, and it's very efficient. And there's an element of me when I walk Mac Jones where I think, man, this guy looks like a 10-year NFL veteran backup. Like, he's just carving up the preseason fourth game, just crushing it. And it's, you know, it's because he knows exactly what to do with the ball and gets the ball out super efficient. But, and, you know, I just don't see – Justin Fields does that too. It's just the other half of the time he's getting his face blasted in, and, you know, and it doesn't work out all the time. So, I could feel myself making excuses with it. I don't think that there's anything that jumps off the film that says Justin Fields can't do everything that Mac Jones does.
The answer? Get DUIs.
Jesus.
You're supposed to be above this.
I can't. If Justin Fields had a DUI, we would be hearing.
Seriously.
They would be writing books on it. Okay,
of course.
There would be a smear campaign. We'd be seeing those political commercials talking about how can you elect this man to be your quarterback? He once drove under the influence.
There'd be like that picture of Matt Gaetz, but it would have Mac Jones's face on it, and it would be all around Twitter. But I mean. I think it is important to realize the biases that have crept in, and I think it's good to push back on them. And, you know, but at the same time, like, I do, it's interesting. Like, do you believe, because this is one of my beliefs, I think everybody on Niners Nation is trying to bash Mac Jones as a player, right? His play. And I think he's a fine prospect where he was initially marketed, which was pick 19. I think at 3, it's an absolute travesty if he went ahead. We're conflating those between this guy's good, a decent prospect, back half of the first round, which, by the way, no quarterbacks get taken in the back half of the first round anymore, really. It's you're shoved all the way up to the front, or you're taken like maybe Jordan Love last year. And it's unfortunate for a player like Mac Jones, because he's going to be taken, and the expectations for him are just going to be too high. I think he's one of those that can be elevated by a system. I don't think he can elevate a team himself.
Yeah, JT, do you follow like the betting markets at all with any of this stuff? No. So you could have bet, we actually bet it, was it 2 months ago?
18.5.
Whether Mac Jones was drafted pick 18.5 earlier or later, okay? It's now, we bet earlier, it's now 3.5.
That he is currently the favorite to go to the Niners in the betting markets.
Let me get you out of here on this. You've played in the league with the 49ers, obviously, so you must have some intel. Who do you think? I'm kidding. Who do you think they're going to take? Like, do you think this is a huge smokescreen that the media is blowing up? Or do you actually think they'd take Mac Jones?
Well, before I answer that, I'm not going to let the three white guys get off here with that easy of a take on Mac Jones, Justin Fields. Because if you don't talk about the race dynamic of this, fair, you're just doing yourself a disservice. And whether it's, you know, the jokes about the DUI, and I get it, although it's, you know, it's not funny, but it is, I get it. The element that this is okay or cool to kind of have these kind of like white savior quarterback moments and make it the norm across the kind of narrative across multiple platforms, and it'd be okay to do and not mention anything about how these quarterbacks that aren't white get treated differently is just, it's not cool. I feel like we're past it. I feel like you have to, especially someone who's gotten so much from the game, it's important for me to just name it when it happens. I don't have the answer for it. You know, I certainly don't, other than the fact of bringing attention to it. But I think we joke around about them not being treated the same. They're not close to being treated the same on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not just the Mac Jones. It's Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence. It's Justin Fields, everyone. It's Trey Lance, what that looks like. And so I think you just name it, and you hope that you continue to call attention to it and hope that it changes over time, because I think it should. And there are so many reasons and so many guys who are doing it at the right level and doing it really well at the highest level that it will continue to get better and better. But it keeps popping up and it keeps becoming the norm, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, it's certainly something
well said.
It's certainly, yeah, I think so too. I think it's certainly something where, as George pointed to, in one case you're finding reasons to ignore things, and in another case you're finding reasons to exploit things or explore
things that may not have ever existed.
And it masquerades itself as, well, I'm just asking a question, or I'm just reporting what somebody told me. And I think that, to your point on your, and we talked about this too, if you're an analyst, it's your job to actually go further and say, does this have any credibility? Does this make us smarter? Does this put us in position to, and the other thing, and I think you can appreciate this having played, this is Justin Fields' livelihood. I mean, we're not necessarily talking about this isn't a game. It's a game, but it's not a game, you know, because if he gets picked, you know, right now, Justin Fields' number is like 7.5. If he gets picked, if he falls to Denver at 9, versus being picked at 3 by San Francisco, that's an enormous amount of money over the course of your life that is based upon these little like microaggression type things that are not.
I mean, here's what I'll say about this though. Hopefully, Kyle Shanahan is not listening to any of these goobers. Has done. There's a reason they traded up. They're not trading up because they didn't know who they'd want to take. You know, I think that's the point you made. They'd be happy with any of those three guys. They knew one of them would be there, and so he's not being influenced by this. Before I got to know, percentage chance you think they take Mac Jones? I need this for my own sanity, JT. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, I lost you for a hot second.
You're good. Percentage. I need you to help me through this trying time here. Percentage chance Mac Jones is a 49er.
I mean, I want to say less than 25% chance.
Okay.
And that's just me being too having too good a hearing. Like I just feel like. I don't understand. They're seeing something that I'm not seeing, if that's the case.
You seem like the first time we've had you on, you've been a straight shooter. You've told it like it is. You're also a very good comedian, so I trust you implicitly. And I'm taking that one to the bank. I personally agree with you. Eric agrees with you. JT O'Sullivan, QB school.
We're definitely wrong.
No, we're not wrong. We're going to will this into existence, damn it. Justin Fields is going to be leading our Niners to a Super Bowl in a couple of years. The QB school on YouTube, you've got to check it out. You got to go watch the QB rankings. Everyone watching this probably likes dry humor. Go check it out. And all of the other videos that aren't a joke are awesome as well. JT, thank you, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. I had a blast. Anytime.
That was great. Big thanks to JT O'Sullivan. So we were trying to get the interview lined up, and JT just literally sends over his, like, here's my schedule for the day. If you can fit it in here, like, make it happen. And the dude is making some moves out there. Props to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's doing a decent amount of meetings. We saw him on Underdog the other day.
Yeah, with Josh Norris.
Great group of guys there. And obviously, then he's also a high school football coach. And, you know, going through that as well. And I think he's also got kids, as he talked about in there. So I thought his bit about, you know, the best thing you learned from Favre, I thought it was great. The whole, like, you know, you have to overcome your coach.
Yeah, I'm shocked that your favorite part was the Favre part. I really am.
I mean, Favre is like many things. There's some good and there's some bad.
That was certainly a takeaway. I really appreciate people like him who are not worried about just talking about things that need to be talked about.
Yeah.
And I think we're fairly outspoken, and we've talked about the iniquity that is being shown towards, you know, Justin Fields relative to some of the other prospects, but to name it, I think was really important, and it's something that I'll certainly remember.
Because as we found out, if you take a gander at some, you know, whatever, like if you beat around it, the people that don't agree with you are going to comment on it anyway.
Yep.
So I would think it was good for him to say that, and obviously, we agree with him, and we've seen numerous cases of when players have earned that label and when they've avoided that label for basically the same things. Or basically the same actions, but not the same environments. You get those inequities over time. And now, you know, what's, I think, encouraging as the situation has gotten better for African American quarterbacks in the NFL, but certainly not to where it needs to be. And it's good to call out some of the, because again, like we said, like these things spiral. I mean, we all think, okay, they're a top 10 draft pick. They're going to make a lot of money. But if you pay somebody, you know, upfront $5 million difference at the beginning, then of course that's going to spiral out of, you know, that difference is going to magnify as you put it through interest rates and stuff like that. So it's good to call that out. And again, I think the good thing is we got to a little bit of today of discussing the players for their merits on the field, of which Mac Jones has quite a few, I think fewer than Fields though.
No, 100%. And here's what I had a feeling that we were going to get to this point, but I think he hammered it home for me. I don't know that I feel super confident in who I would take right now at number one, number two, or number three. And I'm not saying that I couldn't like pinpoint it down, but I think there, like, maybe there should be more discussion.
Okay, this is where I stand though. I am very much a markets matter person, and I'm very much a wisdom of the crowds person, vis-a-vis, and I don't know. I think the issue is, and JT, wisdom of the crowds matters and is accurate when the crowd consists of many independent thinkers, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why the Chris Sims, so we had Chris on and people gave us flack for basically being nice to him about his rankings. I thought that was a great conversation.
Yeah.
I don't agree with all, but the thing is you know what Chris Sims offers? An independent.
We were there to learn.
Doesn't even have to be all that informed. I'm not saying Chris isn't informed, but the wisdom of the crowds works because of the law of large numbers and a bunch of independent individuals. The issue, and this is true about a lot of things like media consolidation, all that kind of stuff, when you go with the group, the wisdom of the crowds decreases because there isn't that many people in the crowd anymore. You got one big ball of people that all believe the same thing, and then you have a few independent thinkers, but your sample size is a lot smaller. So I appreciate the wisdom of the crowds, but I wonder sometimes if in the draft world it is violated. And so that's why I am not quick to judge somebody who says, I like Zach Wilson over Trevor Lawrence, fight me. I'm like, if you do, and frankly, our numbers kind of like Zach Wilson over Trevor Lawrence. But at the same time, I do have some respect for the market, and the market has been this way for a long time. So I'm conflicted. I do think if Lawrence went, I would not be offended. But if Wilson went first or Fields, I wouldn't be all that offended.
See, I think it's violated by the draft crowd, and here's why. when, okay, for a lot of people that cover the draft and are draft focused, this is their rankings are really important. And we've seen this in our own company where you kind of got to decide where you're going to take your stance, okay? Because at the end of the day, where you feel differentiated is like, okay, I had this guy higher than anyone else, and look, he was really good. And I think it really comes down to a lot of people going, you know what? If I was judging this, you know, completely without any, you know, bias or out knowing anything else about what other people felt, I would have a different order. But that's not where I'm going to stake my claim. I'm not that confident that I want to be the one guy who was respected, didn't have Trevor Lawrence number one, and then Trevor Lawrence is great, and I am toast.
You're also talking about why a lot of coaches don't go for it on fourth down and three from their own 40, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to stray so far from the norm, even if it's positive EV, that I am fired. I'd rather dump expected value consistently
and
keep my job for as long as possible. I will say this, and this is an interesting thing. When it comes to betting the draft, when it comes to analyzing the draft, I do know people in the league who think Justin Fields is like not a first round pick. Like mm-hmm. it's one of those where I do believe that within the NFL, there are people who are independent. I think that's part of their job. Like they don't listen to us during this time. Like they don't mm-hmm. watch media. They might consult with us for B2B stuff and all that stuff, but they don't watch NFL Network. They don't right. know who Daniel Jeremiah has. They don't know who Todd McShay has. That is their job. And so it is why the draft is so the actual draft is unpredictable, because these teams have boards that are so much different than the consensus boards. If we could get our hands on those and simulate the thing out, I do think we would predict the draft a lot better than, you know, and Benjamin Robinson actually does a really good job with public mocks. But I think we could do even better, I think, if we had independent mocks from mm-hmm. within teams, just because I do think that is the place where, for better or worse, independence is still achieved.
Those are some really good points. I think it's so tough because you'll never know. But, yeah. Which is what I'm trying to get at. It's like you could be right and you'll never know, because as we were talking about, the environment is so important. But I'll say this. I'm looking at DraftKings Sportsbook right now, and Justin Fields is plus 250 to go third overall, and Mac Jones is minus 200.
It's absurd.
And I don't know what the limit bet is. Because I don't have access to actually bet here on this hallowed ground in Ohio.
Yeah, you have to go to.
You got to find it somewhere else. I think I may just go all in on Justin Fields, man. This is fucking ridiculous. I can understand similar prospects being, you know, it being a tough call. I don't think Justin Fields and Mac Jones are similar prospects. I just don't. I think they're super far apart.
Well, and there's the limits aren't particular. So when we talk about these things, a lot of times these are small limits, but they are moving. You go to FanDuel or you go to, you know, MyBookie, you yeah. know, you and they're similar. But I will say this, the interesting thing is when you look at the other, so when Ben Brown and I wrote the market implied mock, we had Fields go third because at the time he was the favorite, and then it switched literally in an hour after the Schefter yep. tweet. But take a look at, and this is what we tried to do. We didn't just try to take the one. We tried to take this market along with this market, mm-hmm. along with that market and this market. And take a look, like BetOnline, for example, number one draft pick. Lawrence favored, Wilson second favorite, Fields third favorite. No Mac Jones there, right? You look at the second overall pick odds. It would stand to reason that if Mac Jones is the favorite to be the second overall pick over Justin Fields, he would have better odds to be, or the third overall pick. Yeah, he would be the better odds to be the second overall pick. And when you look at the second overall pick, now I'm patting myself on the back because I got this at minus 167. Zach Wilson minus 2,000, Justin Fields plus 1,600. Mac Jones is actually after Trey Lance to be picked second. So again, I like looking at the markets. I'm looking at them for value. They just because he's favored to be the third overall pick on April 7th of 2021 doesn't mean he will be. And if this thing flips, if you look at the theoretical hold, I'm looking at right now. I have one of these on here. The theoretical hold for these markets is like, I'm looking at first cornerback pick just because it's right up on my screen, 30%. So this book, if they flip, they're not getting middled by you, right? Okay, so like a lot of times there's good information here, but they're not scared of you betting both sides of this.
No.
Because you're not making that much money off.
No. I will say this, I have yet to bet Mac Jones to go third overall. I have bet Trey Lance at 7-1 to go third overall. I have bet Trey Lance to go ahead of Justin Fields. But I'm going to give you an analogy, and you probably can't get down nearly as much money as this other event. But this feels like a little Biden-Trump. 11 p.m. Oh, no.
I talk about Zach Wilson at second. I have the limit on that. I have about half that on Fields going third at +150. And currently, by the way, to speak to the hold point, Fields at +150 was value relative to what it is now. Mm-hmm. It's 125. Like, again, they're like the theoretical hold for that market is humongous. So just it to me, again, have fun with this.
Especially I'm trying to retire. Yeah, okay, like, I want to form. No, here's what I want to do, Eric. Remember how we had the over on the national anthem, and we started a syndicate for that? I'd like to start a syndicate for Justin Fields to go third overall.
Yeah. Can I give you a little bit of a confession?
Sure.
I've been betting at the consultation of our friend Paul Carey, who works for us. There's no games on right now that I care about. Mm-hmm. College basketball.
Hey, the Reds are playing right down the street.
NHL shot props have been what I've been betting to try to build the bankroll for the draft.
Wow.
And look, I feel blessed. Last year at this time, Matt and Sims were literally the only thing we can bet other than draft props. And now, George.
There you have it.
We have an actual game.
Blessed because he can bet on the NHL. I feel blessed because the Masters are actually going to happen this weekend.
Firing up my sportsbook here.
Real quick, though, I want your 30-second Sam Darnold take, because this was big news yesterday, and now no one really gives a shit about it. What are your thoughts on the trade?
Okay. When I see things like this, I said the same thing about tagging Dak Prescott. If the best thing happens to you, what happens? When it was Prescott, the best thing that happened to Dallas, like, almost happened, and they paid dearly for it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So tagging him was not a great choice, in my opinion. If the best thing happens to Darnold, given everything we know, Darnold becomes a top 15 quarterback, like top 12, let's say. Top 12 is not enough to get you a mega deal. Mm-mm. Top 12 is enough to kind of continue to chop your feet about him. Mm-hmm. But a top 12, if Joe Brady gets Darnold in the top 12, he's getting a head coaching job somewhere else. And now Darnold has his fourth offensive coordinator in 5 years. And you have all those, you open the can of worms question marks again, right? Assuming you pick up his fifth option, which has been reported that they want to do. Like, I just don't get it. And that year, 2022, is the year you're giving up the 2 and the 4. So, like, I have no clue. Look, I like Teddy more than you do. But what is Teddy not giving you that Sam Darnold is, other than youth?
Well, that's going to be my take on this whole thing, is Sam Darnold gives you at least a pipe dream of still having the ability to
be elite. Sort of my Jameis take. But Jameis wouldn't have been a 2 and a 6.
Sure. I mean, look, I think they overpaid for something that they feel gives them a shot of, you know, catching lightning in a bottle. For a guy who was on a terrible team with a coach who, by all accounts, has not been very good at coaching the game of football from a quarterback standpoint. And he's 23 years old.
Yeah. What this signals, by the way, also, is the Falcons are probably trading for, right? Because my biggest issue with this is that...
Why is that?
Well...
Why would they be probably trading for because of this trade?
Because I think they probably offered, Carolina is not that far away from four.
Right.
And four gets you not all that far away from either at least Trey Lance, at least Mac Jones, and if
maybe
your Niners fuck up.
Yeah, maybe Justin Fields.
The issue is probably the either Atlanta's completely blue-balling them and say, we're not trading with a division rival, or like it just costs them too much in a trade. And like,
but that would lead you to believe they're not trading.
No, because I do think it's open for business there.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. If they can't trade with the Falcons, right, but mm-hmm. somebody else can, then their best shot is the fifth best quarterback at 9 or 6 or wherever they go back. To me, that's the issue. I think they believe, and I'll amend this, I think they believe that either Atlanta's taking a quarterback at 4 or they're trading the pick and a quarterback's Thanks. Going there. And then they can't – because honestly, if they don't think Atlanta's going to trade four yeah. and they'll take the best position player, then they could trade with the Bengals, or they can assume the Bengals are going to be dumb, as Duke yeah. Tobin said the other day, and not think about trading. Then they could trade back with Miami. Like, there were so many outs for them at the QB position that – the only thing that leads me to believe that Darnold was their best option was that the fourth guy is being picked off at 4.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of like, well, fuck, if we had to have Mac Jones. And like,
right. I think they're probably not enamored with Mac Jones,
yeah.
which would be shocking. He's
actually, Mac Jones would be fine for them. I mean, yeah. Mac Jones with Joe Brady would be his second best possibility.
No, I think Denver would be better.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think more highly of Brady than Shermer, but I think it's closer than most people do.
I agree.
But they have not Samuel, they have Anderson.
And more. But and I more. Really like what Denver's got with Fant, yeah, Judy, Sutton. Dude, Courtland Sutton, Jerry Judy, KJ Hamler, Noah Fant, that's really good.
Yeah, you're playing a little bit more in the AFC West. I think the teams are better than the NFC South currently, other than Tampa.
I stand by that. Denver is a better place. Okay. Great. We've talked about all – we never have to talk about Sam Darnold again for the rest of the year. Okay, the Masters. Here's what I do. I generally try to find some longer shots. There's never value on the favorites.
Like Steve?
I do not have a system like Steve. Okay? Usually, I follow golf a little more closely, and I try to identify players who maybe didn't win recently but have played well. I didn't really do that this year. The player who's playing really well of late is Jordan Spieth, and he's a popular play, so he is – like 10-1 to win. That's not a lot of value. So I place a couple of long shot bets on players to win. I've got Colin Morikawa at 30-1. Has won a major before. I think has all of the game necessary. Really good with his irons, and that's what you need at the Masters.
I can only get him for 29-1.
Okay. Well, I don't even know if he's really good with his irons. So whatever. That's what I remember from the PGA. Here's my favorite one, which is Xander Schauffele at 25-1 to win. Xander Schauffele was very close the year that Tiger ended up winning. I love his game. He's from California. I think he's going to win a major very soon. I don't see why it wouldn't be this one.
From California variable.
Check. Brooks Koepka is 28-1. I'm not sure I would bet him to win because he's coming off of a knee injury, but I like him sneaky to
finish. Like in head-to-heads?
Yeah, I think he could come out firing. He's got something to prove. People said he wouldn't be able to come back. He's plus 550 to go top 10.
You impressed I know that head-to-heads exist in golf?
No, I'm actually not surprised you know that. Tony Finau, I have to bet him every year. He's 40-1. But again, a guy that has had success at Augusta.
Hasn't he been somebody that's like epically melted down a number of times?
He has. That's why he's 40-1, okay? Remember, Sergio epically melted down, won a Masters.
And then won one, yeah.
And this is a bet I place every year as well, out of courtesy to one of the greatest golfers, to never really be that great of a golfer, but one of the coolest dudes out there, Fred Couples. He's 66-1 to finish top 10. I don't think he's gonna even wants to play like four full rounds.
Gonna make the cut.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to play four full rounds. But I'll say this: he's a friend of Tiger's. They usually play practice rounds together. Okay, another guy that does that is Justin Thomas. I'll probably bet him maybe to you know, in some head-to-heads. But I think Fred Couples wants to give a little extra for his buddy T-Dub, okay, who's watching at home. So maybe he pulls it out, gets a little top 10, 66-1.
The media, by the way, we talk about the media in this podcast. Remember the Woods accident, how much they botched that?
Oh, my goodness.
That was – we're going to miss Tiger. Was Tiger – Tiger won the Masters 2 years ago. Am I okay? And that was I remember being at the Cincinnati airport, like, when should I bet this? You're like, yesterday? And like,
fuck. Yeah, that was I bet Tiger to win that, and it was fantastic. Okay, that's our show. We'll be back on Sunday with win totals. Thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks to JT O'Sullivan. Peace.